My presentation is going to be slightly different from the abstract, so if you happen to have read it, I hope you won't regret being here. I'm in urban forestry, and much of my and my colleagues' research focuses on growing healthy trees in urban areas, and preferably big trees, because they provide more benefits. This, of course, depends on the site. Not every site can take it. But I want to focus my presentation on one of the designs you'll find in all urban areas that is most challenging to urban trees, and that's the tree pit. So I'm going to be talking about street tree and parking lot tree pits and why and how they're different from especially rural soils, what the challenges are that we're kind of facing and potential approaches we can take and still growing big trees and healthy trees in urban areas. So the one problem, I suppose, is engineering standards. We have to make sure that sidewalks and roads are not collapsing, and therefore, many of those designs look like scraping, taking the soil off, making sure that the subbase is highly compacted, filling it up with gravel or different things as well as concrete. And so you have a layer of, very compacted soil and then other soils that don't necessarily support tree growth either. And in addition to that, you might add topsoil or other amendments to make trees happy if you can. But a site, a common construction site might look like this picture. So you have a lot of different things going on that do different things to the soil and, soil organisms and trees as well. So this is a tree pit that you can find in, any urban area. And depending on the surrounding soil, the surrounding soil type, so let's say whether you have a clay or a sand, the compacted soil will be more or less root growth. Resistant to root growth penetration. There we have it. So this, this is a common tree pit. You can see on the bottom possibly that, there's some gravel in there and some other leftovers, and this picture is even more obvious. So in a tree pit, you can find all sorts of things from, trash, gravel, soil, different kinds of soil types, and it makes the whole thing a little bit complicated. Nonetheless, we do appreciate trees. Trees do a lot of good things. They clean the air, they clean the soil, they make people happy, they reduce crime, they increase property values, and all those good things. But do we get there? And so there's potentially a fine line between reaching a canopy cover, like the pictures on the left, let's see, big trees, healthy trees, green trees that make us happy, and the trees you see on the right that will probably not really survive. So the common or average lifespan of an urban tree is between 7 and 10 years. And even if you're not in forestry, that's pretty darn short. And so many times, if there are urban greening projects, the result looks like that. And I hope you don't need glasses to find all those trees they've planted, but you can clearly see that planting more trees doesn't necessarily mean increasing the canopy cover. And the soil that the trees are planted in is going to determine what's going to happen. So there are different scenarios you may reach with your effort, and it might either be wasted money or you'll be successful. I'm going to show you a whole row of pictures that show how well we appreciate trees and how well we make sure that trees will grow well in where they're planted. So this is a picture that shows you not only is the tree pit very small, but it's also aligned with concrete because we don't want the trees to escape under the pavement and heave the sidewalk, because then we're going to hurt ourselves. And in addition to that, part of the root ball is cut out to put an electricity box of some sort. So here's another picture of a very small cutout that a tree has just been planted in. This is even smaller. I took this picture in England, and it just blew my mind. And the tree wasn't particularly happy, but it was still sort of alive. This is another small tree pit that clearly has a very low infiltration rate. So I don't know how the tree looks on top, but it's, anyway. And then the other issue, of course, is if the tree happens to find the resources it needs to grow, it might not find the structural stability it needs. So this is another issue you might be facing planting trees in a small tree pit like that. This is a tree that has not survived because, as well, the infiltration rate was not very high and the tree did not make it. This tree was not just, vandalized below the surface, but also on top. So it's just been cut off at some point and, regrew. This is a very small cutout that has not been treated very well, and the tree did not make it. Here we clearly show the tree what we thought about it, and this is not anything different. So now we have to make a choice. Do we fit the site to the species, or do we fit the species to the site? There are ways to improve the soil. So you can add topsoil, you can add fungi, you can add all sorts of amendments. But the basic line is that in most street tree and parking lot cutouts, it's just too small. And if you have a compacted soil surrounding this tree pit, the roots will not get there. And so no matter how good the soil is in the tree pit, it might not just cut it. And so one way to improve the condition of the soil the condition that the tree is growing in the city is by incorporating engineering soils. And so the picture on the right, the sketch shows you that the structural soil will not be in the pit or not only in the pit, but it will surround the pit under the pavement. So it will hold the pavement and still have a high porosity where trees can grow roots in. And the roots, as you can see on the other picture, are growing, and they're growing deeply. So they're not just growing in this interface between the soil and the pavement. They're actually growing deep, hopefully not heaving the sidewalk. The graph on the left shows you that some structural soils have been patented in the 90s, and so, you know, 15 years can almost be considered a long-term project, considering that urban trees don't really get very old. This just shows you kind of a general idea of how structural soils compare to the conventional tree pit surrounded by compacted soil, and they're generally doing a lot better. Another possibility is a suspended pavement, and the idea of that is to have uncompacted soil or non-compacted soil around the tree. So, you know, the suspended pavement, and Jim's going to talk about that as well, I'm sure. So there will be a structure that holds up the pavement, so you don't need the soil to be compacted to make sure that it doesn't, that the pavement doesn't collapse, and you have uncompacted soil that the tree can grow roots in. So if you fit the species to the site, you have to look at the soil and what you had to make sure that the tree will fit those resources. But the question then, of course, is what do we assess? Do we need to assess every site? How variable are these tree pit soil conditions in an urban area? Is it very variable and you should be looking at every site, or is it kind of general the same, how they, you know, differ between cities? And we've looked at, it's a part of a larger study, and we looked at two different cities and compared surface soil samples in tree and parking lot cutouts to see how they vary. And these are all surface soil samples in Washington, D.C. And you can just, you know, look by looking at it, tell that these soils are variable. We've looked at a whole suite of soil properties, soil texture, a whole list of plant available nutrients, pH, CEC, organic matter, soluble salts, and soil depth, and we compared the means and looked at the coefficient of variation to have an idea of the variability, which is the standard deviation divided by the mean. And if it's above one, it can be seen as high variability. This is a bulk density sample I attempted to take in a cutout, and this was one of the better ones. Especially in smaller cutouts, you have a lot of roots. If it's not, you know, rocks and other stuff that will mess up your bulk density sample, it'll be roots if the tree's alive. So that's really difficult, and we had to kind of go away from that route a little bit. So just looking at the texture, based on the NRCS soil surveys, DC is classified as loamy and Jacksonville is classified as sandy. And if you look at our samples, Jacksonville was in 90% of all samples was classified as sandy, and Washington, D.C. 99%. So this is luckily, since that method can be quite resource intensive and long, well, you need a lot of time to do it depending on the method you choose. So it's nice to know that the resource you can get from the literature are actually pretty accurate. And don't get scared by the table. I'll try to point out the most important things. So these are all the soil properties we measured on each site. It shows you the min, the mean, and the max, the standard error, and the coefficient of variation. And besides copper, total and boron being considered or can be considered plant limiting, nitrate and ammonia had a very high variability. But there were four, you know, variables that were not far behind. Now, looking at Jacksonville, it's the same list of nutrients that we looked at, and copper, total N were considered plant limiting, and copper, zinc, and iron were had a very high variability within the city, and only MN was pretty close behind. So now if we, what is happening? If we compare Jacksonville and D.C. to have an idea how these two different, how these cities vary from one another, you can see that the majority of all the soil variables was very different from one another. So probably, you know, 3/4 of all the variables were very much different between the two cities. CN ratio, calcium, CEC, and pH was higher in Jacksonville, and all the remaining ones were a lot higher in Washington, D.C. So we attempted to come up with a summary table that would give an idea of which variables one should measure and which variables may not quite may not be that important. And we looked at the cost, which for a lot of folks is, you know, a big deal, practicability, the relevance of the data, and then the variability potential. And it's quite difficult. You know, if you look at the data and you look at different cities, it's not easy to say measure this and don't measure that. And so the ones you might want to focus on, but that depends on different things, is plant available nutrients, organic matter, and pH. pH has a high influence on other nutrients, so it's quite important. But if you do want to measure all the nutrients that affect tree growth, then, of course, you're going to have, you know, a lot of variables to look at. So that's kind of the downfall to that side. And the other two that would be important and pretty easy to measure is cutout size and soil strength. So those two would be very important as they affect tree growth if you wanted to assess the site. So now a more practical approach has been taken by a couple of folks in Ohio at the Department of Natural Resources. It's Alan Sievert and Stephanie Miller. And they looked at kind of developing an urban site index that will, you know, will be fast, easy, and will tell you what's going to happen. Sort of, that's kind of a summary of that, I suppose. And we know that, you know, a large site compared to a small site, the large site's going to support a tree, where the small site might not support a tree. Or it might support a small tree, but if it's very small, it's probably not going to support very much, no matter the size. So now, in kind of comparison, a good site, it's going to support every tree, where a bad site might only support the tough trees. So, and this is really important to distinguish because it's going to be a major part if you want to increase biodiversity. You really want to, you know, if you want to have a wide range of species, you don't want to waste a good site on a locust if you can have a different species because the locust is going to grow somewhere else. So distinguishing these two sites is quite important. And what they did, and it's very, you know, kind of quick and dirty, they looked at 8 observations. 4 looking at the soil and 4 looking at the site, you know, the street, how much traffic is there, how big is the road, is there parking, what's the, you know, block length, so how much do people speed up and slow down, and the soil observations, of course, it's compaction, which they only do by foot, so they don't even bother using, you know, doing bulk density sampling, they only pretty much tap on and say, yep, that's pretty compacted. They look at resistance using a soil probe and then looking at the profile to have an idea of, you know, organic matter, horizons, what is going on. And they're going to, they came up with this numerical scale from 0 to 20, and around 20 is a really good site and around 0 is a really bad site. And there are, of course, poor and intermediate site in between. And they came up with a rating for different species. And so if you know how your site rates, you might be able to then know which species you're supposed to plant in this site or on this site. So if you, you know, look at the locust, it's going to do great at a rating of 7, which is, you know, rather towards a poor site than towards a great site. And if you look at sugar maple, it's going to grow great at 16. So it needs a lot better site compared to the honey locust. And this way you might be able to increase biodiversity by knowing what you can plant and where without going through all the, you know, soil sampling through all the city and so forth. So tree pits are in every city. They are, you know, very limiting generally. We're quite challenged in coming up with ways to grow trees to a decent size in those tree pits. And we are, you know, trying to increase their life for all the benefits they provide. And there are ways to do that by fitting the site to the species, but that can be, you know, quite expensive doing that. One big expense, of course, is excavation. So no matter what kind of system or soil you put in there, you still have to excavate. Or you find a way to fit the species to the site by, you know, doing either a quick and dirty analysis or more in detail, or, you know, this is especially for retrofitting, quite important because you don't want to start from scratch. And so there are easy to measure ways that people are developing over the last years, and Brian Scharnbrock is another one, and some other folks that have been working on this, so hopefully we'll be more successful in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Julia. Cord is up. So there is chance for a question or two if you have some of her.
Yeah.
Is there a way to combine this suitability index that you just showed with some multivariate index of the ecosystem service that each species provides? Because some of those species are really high VOC producers. You don't want to have them in certain areas. I mean, it would be awesome to have something for people to choose to say, okay, this is what can grow at this site. Mm-hmm. And then of those, what are the ecosystem services that I'm looking for?
I don't know if that exists. I know people are calculating it, and there are different models out there where you can, you know, see which species at what size or age, if you want to, you know, see it as equal, what they provide. I don't think these folks are working on it, but there are different definitely ways to have a list of, you know, these are the species that would fit this site, but these you kind of don't want to choose in this kind of situation, or these would be, you know, a good choice, or these species have been overplanted in the last 20 years, so you may want to leave it out. Yeah.
Because like right now, I mean, I see that, you know, there's a list in Phoenix for poolside plants, and then that's it.
Yeah.
And, then no one's really thought about all the other things that plants are doing, and to get that into the guidelines that are on the web that are easily available.
I think sometimes that's a problem, too, that the information is out there, but it's in all different places, so you really have to make an effort to get the information that you need to make the decision. And I guess that's tricky in urban forestry, too, because there's so many different disciplines that work together or not. It's all over the place. But the information is there somewhere. But it should definitely be a little bit closer to make it all useful for everyone. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it would to a certain degree, definitely. And there has been, the research I know is mainly on, you know, either pollutants or stormwater. And then there's, you know, a different set that looks at soil and tree growth, whether pervious, impervious to tree growth. I'm not aware of that.
There was just a new paper in, I think, Urban Greening
on tree growth, permeable versus?
Root penetration within permeable.
Oh, do you know what soils they were dealing with?
Yeah, I think it's Urban Greening.
No, what soils below the pavement they were dealing with?
Yeah. Yeah. That wasn't Fizbaran. I wasn't a co-author on that one, was I? Because we had. I looked at the soil part of it, and Boulder looked at the root part of it. And
okay.
It was, and that was in Urban Greening and came out this year.
Okay, so what soils were you looking at below the pavement? Do you remember?
I can't remember. It was in a dryland zone in the Brazos Valley, and we had permeable concrete and just compacted in that.
Okay.
I'll send you a copy.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ship's clay.
Yes, exactly. Ship's clay.
Yeah.
Okay, and so the higher moisture content that lowered the resistance for the... Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Which that probably would depend on the soil type. So if you have a sand, that probably doesn't make a lot of difference. If you have a clay, it does. And then how much... Yeah.